It's Friday, May 17th. Let's talk PlayStation. As always, we'll kick it off with our weekly PlayStation Plus Instant Game Collection reminder. For the month of May 2019, you are getting Overcooked and What Remains of Edith Finch. You have until June to download these games. Now let's get to our first news story right away, because this is really exciting. Kind of a big deal. Out of left field, certainly. I don't think anybody really saw this coming, but just yesterday, over on Microsoft's official news feed, they posted a new entry announcing a strategic partnership between Sony and Microsoft. And in the headlining image, you can even see current Sony president and CEO Kenichiro Yoshida shaking hands with Satya Nadella, the current CEO of Microsoft. So let's really unwrap this post, because kind of a big deal, but it is very vague. Well, we'll read some key points here. It says, the two companies will explore joint development of future cloud solutions in Microsoft Azure to support their respective game and content streaming services. In addition, the two companies will explore the use of current Microsoft Azure data center-based solutions for Sony's game and content streaming services. By working together, the companies will aim to deliver more enhanced entertainment experiences for their worldwide customers. These efforts will also include building better development platforms for the content creator community. Sony and Microsoft will also explore collaboration in the areas of semiconductors and AI. For semiconductors, this includes a potential joint development of new intelligent image sensor solutions by integrating Sony's cutting-edge image sensors with Microsoft's Azure AI technology in a hybrid manner across cloud and edge, as well as solutions that leverage Sony's semiconductors and Microsoft's cloud technology. The companies aim to provide enhanced capabilities for enterprise customers. In terms of AI, the parties will explore incorporation of Microsoft's advanced AI platform and tools in Sony consumer products to provide highly intuitive and user-friendly AI experiences. Now, this next quote is coming right from Sony CEO Kenichiro Yoshida, but he says, Sony is a creative entertainment company with a solid foundation of technology. We collaborate closely with a multitude of content creators that captures the imagination of people around the world. And through our cutting-edge technology, we provide the tools to bring their dreams and vision to reality. PlayStation itself came about through the integration of creativity and technology. Our mission is to seamlessly evolve this platform as one that continues to deliver the best and most immersive entertainment experiences, together with a cloud environment that ensures the best possible experiences anytime, anywhere. For many years, Microsoft has been a key business partner for us. Though, of course, the two companies have also been competing in some areas, I believe that our joint development of future cloud solutions will contribute greatly to the advancements of interactive content. Additionally, I hope that in the areas of semiconductors and AI, leveraging each company's cutting-edge technology in a mutually complementary way will lead to the creation of new value for society. The post ends off by saying that the two companies will share more details as they become available. Now, the one thing I take away immediately from this announcement is that this is purposely vague for a few reasons. One thing being they want this to be on their own terms, which means that they want to avoid leaks, rumors, anything like that. You can already tell that, well, sure, this conversation between both Sony and Microsoft took place prior to this announcement. It's not like they just did it in 1 hour and then made this post. Something happened building up to this, but it was probably a situation where it was just a very few select amount of people, including the CEOs, maybe a couple of other executives, whether it was a group phone call, an actual in-person meeting, what have you. But it was obviously a situation where very few individuals were involved. And so before they actually discuss at greater lengths of in terms of what this is or what they're trying to accomplish together, they really just wanted to get this out in the open right now before more, lower level people in both companies get wind of this information and start to leak it online. And then, as you know, the rumor mill starts churning, really, and that's kind of a bad public image for both companies when you do have either false or uncredited rumors floating around and you leave people to speculate. This post comes out right away, so that way we have a somewhat decent understanding of what's going on between these two. So this goes to my other point. That's why we don't have specific details about what this partnership entails. There was no specific product's name, no branded initiatives, nothing super specific, because it is so early. So probably even both Sony and Microsoft don't have a total understanding of what they're going to accomplish together just yet. But we do have a rough guideline, which is that Microsoft will be providing Azure technology to Sony, which is certainly great, because Azure is massive. I mean, it's a big data center, big servers. I mean, Microsoft has that infrastructure laid out. Now, yes, Sony has Gaikai, and they're doing their own thing with PlayStation Now and what have you. Again, I can't even really get into details about it, because it may not even necessarily be for that. You would assume so, but I don't want to be the person to say, oh, that's totally what it's for, because we don't know that for sure. They're being purposely vague for a reason. They're not naming products or anything, because they just don't know yet. Or maybe they do know, but again, they don't want to let those details out just yet. And then in terms of semiconductors, image sensing technology, I mean, Sony's well known for providing their image sensors to many manufacturers, mobile phone makers, you know, Sony's big on that. And so you've got a situation where Sony hardware is meshing with Microsoft software. Those two companies have always been well known for those respective fields. And so it does make a lot of sense. It just looks like the companies are finally exploring a way to work together for their own interests. And that's the thing that people need to understand about this is that not just in terms of video game consoles and ridiculous console wars, but these are both massive corporations and they're both looking out for the best interests. They both are in this, they have a vested interest in this together. The one theory that I'm seeing floating around a lot is that they're working together to back off Google Stadia, because if there was anybody that could enter into the games industry with the amount of capital, it would be somebody like Google. Apple could probably also potentially do it, but this is a situation where both Sony and Microsoft are trying to protect their place in the industry, their place in the market. When you do have a major player like Google coming in, it is cause for concern. Google is massive, and they do have that infrastructure laid out. They do have the money. They're integrating with YouTube. I mean, they're making it very accessible. I think that might be the one little magic touch to Google Stadia, is that even though people don't want to stream their games, they don't want to play on a new Google platform, but they have the accessibility of it. But on the flip side, as we mentioned when Google Stadia was announced, no matter how much money you have, consumers just won't use your product if they don't want to use it. Like, for example, Google Plus. If anybody could have made a new social networking platform, it was Google. It didn't work out all so well. And so I can certainly see the validity of that theory, but there's two main avenues that I think this could potentially go down. One being that it's probably a lot more subtle than people are giving this credit for. I think it really could be a scenario where it's more behind the scenes stuff. You see Microsoft providing Azure to Sony, Sony providing image sensors to Microsoft. They're both working together, but it's mutually to just accomplish their own goals and revenue guidelines, things like that. The other avenue is, well, the more outlandish side of what we are discussing, where maybe you will see an official product being released with both of them as a joint venture. Maybe you will see them being totally open and frank with cross game saves, chat, all that ridiculous stuff, right? Where you really wouldn't expect something like that. And maybe it could go down that route. I don't know, but I'm obviously leaning more towards the first part, which is that I think this is going to be a lot more low-key than people think, but we will have to play the waiting game because they were very vague, so it could go either direction. And I think that's what's very exciting about this, is that you now have Microsoft and Sony finally just being totally cool with each other, because potentially Sony would have wanted nothing to do with Microsoft in any way, shape, or form. You do see, you know, in the past, Sony was very reluctant to work with Microsoft, not even just in recent years in terms of, you know, cross-play for games online. That's actually quite minor, but you see situations where, you know, 5-10 years out, where Sony was heavily pushing their own services, whether it was music or video, this and that, and they just don't work with anybody else. If you're going to play on PlayStation, if you're going to use Sony products, it's best to just stay in that ecosystem because they don't play nice with other hardware. It's really refreshing to see Sony do this and be more open. And to be honest, I think only good things can come from this. Now for our next news story, co-director on The Last of Us Part 2, Anthony Newman, posted a very particular tweet this past week where he said, "Hey, come work with us at Naughty Dog, help us close out this game," kind of implying that The Last of Us Part 2 might be closer to being finished than we were led to believe. And if you look at the job listings, some of them are temporary, but some of them are also level designers, melee animators, things like that. You might be wondering, why do they still need those people if they're, you know, apparently finishing the game soon? Well, you have to understand, it's not unheard of for them to need those positions still. They might just be understaffed, or they just might want more manpower to close the game out. And we do know that just recently they finished all the mocap for the game, so it's not really all that surprising. So maybe the game actually is in those final stages of development. And so it really is more a question of, is this game going to hit 2019, or is it going to come out in 2020? And I know a lot of people are finally leaning towards 2020. I think the 2019 dream is over for a lot of people. There's still that rumor where we're supposed to get a Last of Us Part 2 update before E3. There's not that much time left before E3, so we'll probably get it soon if that rumor is to be believed. And that's the thing, is that we're running out of 2019 space for this game to come out at the end of this year. I mean, sure, there's still a lot of 2019 left, but this game still needs a few trailers, some developer interviews, that pre-release hype, you know, the usual spiel of how a game comes out. We need that stuff. And granted, The Last of Us Part 2 could come out tomorrow and do phenomenally well. It would surprise people, certainly, but the game doesn't necessarily need that because of how big it is. It's just a matter of, it is certainly going to have that pre-release hype build up to it. So it's like, we kind of have to start this process now, or before E3, like that rumor is suggesting. Otherwise, this game's definitely due for 2020. So we'll see, but there's not that much time left. Speaking of tweets, we have another one to go over. This one's from industry insider TDX in regards to PS4 features that we might be getting in an upcoming firmware update. And just for clarification, TDX has gotten things right and wrong before in the past, so take that for what it is. Apparently he does have an inside source from Sony, and you would assume he does because he has gotten things right before, especially relating to actually PS4 firmware features. Well, anyway, this tweet says, wishlist and gifting for the PlayStation Store, ability to pin, trophy progression, and time log stats for all games. Certainly much needed features. I'm just wondering why this wasn't part of like 6.0, because 6.0 essentially had nothing. And I'm sure 6.0 did have some major groundwork that needed to be laid out for PS4 to optimize the UI or PSN, possibly prep for name changes. I don't know specifically, not many people do, but it's just a matter of when you see something like 6.0 come out, you're pretty much left wondering, okay, looks like we're not going to get anything major for PS4 firmwares moving forward. That's kind of like my prediction, more or less. And I don't think these are super substantial, but certainly they're welcomed. I've been needing gifting on games for PSN for a long time. I'd love to do that for Let's Talk Plus, and trophy progression for a trophy hunter like me. So much needed features. It's just, why weren't these in 6.0? Give 6.0 something. But better late than never. I will certainly take these features, and hopefully they come soon. So it's time to mention some new Dreams creations, some fascinating stuff that people are doing with the creation tools. This guy recreated Ghost of Tsushima. It looks incredible. That vast distance just from the trailer, it looks fantastic. I can't believe some people are really pulling this off. Another one, though, is that somebody is recreating Metal Gear Solid completely, apparently, in Dreams. And the magnitude of what you can do in this game still astounds me. Now, early on in that beta, we got PT recreated, we got Dead Space recreated, and I'm sure they were quite crude in the sense that there wasn't much you could really do, but something like actually recreating Metal Gear Solid is incredible, and this guy actually does go into great detail in terms of how he's accomplishing this, and he's actually asking for help. Very cool stuff. Just wanted to highlight that. I love giving this game attention, honestly, because it really is, it's amazing what you can do in this, in these tools. And my time with the game, I haven't played too much with it. I really wish I had more time to play it, but it is so complex and it is a steep learning curve. And it's unfortunate that it is so steep of a learning curve, so not many people can really jump into it and start creating. But at the very least, you can buy this and play a lot of stuff. And the stuff that you can play is now ranging on a pretty crazy scale from like very cool and unique to full-blown remakes. Now, if you remember last week, we were going over Sony's State of Play with that new Final Fantasy VII Remake trailer, which looked good, but we didn't get any major details. We have to wait until E3 to get those, which is fine, but we were theorizing, like, is this game still episodic? Like, what's going on there? Square Enix did clarify that in their blog by saying that the development of the game is still in multiple parts, and I know that's not really implying that the game's episodic still, but I think that's what they were getting at, which kind of goes into the second part of this news story, which is that Square Enix fiscal forecast for 2019 to 2020 was actually cut in terms of sales and income. So they're kind of already saying, like, hey, we're not going to be releasing anything major within the next year from now. So we know for sure that this game is not going to be coming out at least until now and March 2020. Unsurprising. But what I'm wondering is, what is this timeline going to look like? If this game is still episodic, for example, I mean, we're on the cusp of next generation hardware. What is the release schedule for this game? Now, I understand they want to do it episodically. They want to get as much revenue out of this game as possible. So you release, what, 1, 2, 3 full $60 games. Also, put it on the PlayStation Store so you can just buy disc one, but spend $60 on PSN to get that part two, get that part three. And then, of course, after all three are out, then you do a major bundle, again, $60 for the people that didn't buy all three to begin with. I get the timeline there, but, like, when you've got PlayStation 5 on the horizon, like, what does that look like? Are you just going to port it over? Is it going to be on both machines? Because if part one comes out in, say, 2020, and we get PS5 late 2020, you know, part two, does part two come 3-4 months after? Does it come a year after? I don't understand the timeline of what they're trying to do here. Because they are being very specific. This is still on PlayStation 4, but I'm just wondering how they're going to approach that, because it looks like it could be a bit confusing, a bit muddy, I don't know. But anyway, for this next news story, I found this really fascinating, because over in Japan, PS4 lifetime sales have just been outsold by Nintendo Switch. So over in Japan, PS4 was a little over 8 million systems. Nintendo Switch crept up a little bit past that at 8.1 million systems. And keep in mind, Switch came out 2017, PS4 2013. So Nintendo caught up very quickly with this hardware. And I understand the discrepancy. PS4 is a home console. Nintendo Switch, a hybrid machine, TV, and handheld play. And Japan loves their handheld. So it's understandable that the platform is doing so well. But what I find fascinating is just Nintendo themselves. I'm really proud of what they've done with the Switch, because they really found that perfect middle ground, I think, for staying relevant in games twofold, being that handhelds have just not been as successful as they have been in the past. If you look at 3DS sales, yes, it's at 77 some odd million systems sold worldwide, which is very good, but that's half the DS. Half. That is certainly a substantial decline, and PlayStation Vita just had no place in the games industry. It was unfortunate, and it certainly could have done much better. I think if Sony did all the right things, though, it still would have only done, say, 35, 40 million systems, which is fine, but you have to understand that even though 35, 40 million, or 3DS's 77 million systems sold are still great numbers, but you have to look at it from the developer's point of view, which is that if you've got, you know, something like PlayStation 4, where there's 90 million, upwards of 100 million consoles closely being sold in the market right now, I mean, developers are going to flock to that platform. And that's why PlayStation Vita, I think, had such a tough time, because when you have Sony's developers dedicating themselves to Vita, and Vita doesn't sell, even though there's games like Killzone, Uncharted on there, Little Big Planet, and the system's still not selling, I mean, you're going to put your developers on PlayStation 4, where you're going to make a ton of money, and that's the same with third parties. How many times are you going to have a third party develop a PlayStation Vita game, or even a 3DS game? It gets to a point where, when the hardware, you know, isn't doing all that well, you're going to put your resources into something else. So home consoles make a lot of sense nowadays, and that's why it's hard to make money in the games industry, and certainly that's the case with handhelds. So Nintendo found a sweet spot by offering a platform that can be played on the TV and on the go, and it's great for a market like Japan because they love their handhelds and it's a handheld platform. But then over in the West, the system is still relevant because it can be played on a TV, and so people are having the best of both worlds. And Nintendo found a perfect way to carry on that legacy of handhelds without actually having to do a dedicated handheld. And so now they can focus on this one platform, make it really good, give these developers all the support that they need. They can release variations of the Switch now, which we're probably going to get those rumored redesigns coming up this year, where one's going to be a smaller and handheld only possibly, and one that's more souped up, and that one's more dockable. It's just, I love what Nintendo's doing right now, and it does show that there is a place for handheld still, but you just have to find that middle ground, and Nintendo found it. And I would love for Sony to explore something like that. I don't think it's very probable, and we've seen some very minor rumors regarding it. I've never talked about it on this channel because I think they're too ridiculous. I don't want to be that YouTuber that posts, oh my god, Sony's doing a portable PS5 or some shit like that, because I don't think that's going to happen. If it did, crazy, I would eat my hat, but I'm not expecting it. So I just loved that Nintendo did find their place, though, and it's just great to see it doing so well. Moving on, we got some clarification this past week on the canceled Silent Hills project from Kojima and Guillermo del Toro, which is that the horror manga artist that was originally announced to be working on the project, Junji Ito, turns out that he never actually started any work on the game whatsoever. So initially, when this project was announced, we learned that Junji was actually going to be working on this game and designing the monsters for it. So that's why so many people were so excited for this project, right? Because you've got Kojima, you've got Guillermo del Toro, and now you've got Junji Ito on the game. So it just sounds great. But it turns out he didn't actually do anything for the game, and he actually learned about the game's cancellation from outside sources. So nobody even really told him anything. More or less, he just found out, like, oh, hey, it's not actually happening, even though he never actually did anything. So it looks like this game did not get all that far. I find it fascinating that Kojima works in this way, where he'll, you know, spend all this time making something like PT, which was fascinating, so cool, proof of concept, what's to come. But they did all of that, and then nothing else past that was really done in any way, shape, or form. So he's weird how he works. He just wants you to know immediately, like, hey, I had an idea. Here's what it is, even though it's not even close to being on paper or in a video or in early concept, pre-production, nothing. He'll tell you about his exact thoughts right then and there, and then you play the waiting game for his work. And it's just still sucks that we never got Silent Hills. Yes, I will absolutely be one of those people that loves PT, and I really wish that Silent Hills followed through. But anyway, let's get to Let's Talk Plus, the weekly Let's Talk PlayStation giveaway. One of you can win a $10 PSN code. I would like to congratulate HKTR The Great Gaming. You have won this week's Let's Talk Plus. I'll be contacting you very soon via email or Twitter to give you your $10 code, so be on the lookout for that. But if you would like to win a $10 PlayStation Network code, it is so simple. Follow the link down below to the Gleam website. Supporting this channel a number of ways will gain you an entry, and the winner will be announced next week. Let me pay for your games. We do this every single week on Let's Talk PlayStation. Those are some of the news stories I want to talk about with you guys from this past week. Now, if you didn't see, our Tuesday video was about the PlayStation 2, some of the coolest, rarest, and most expensive consoles out there. It's always cool to look at some of the rare bundles and very sought-after systems that came out, and just some very cool color variations that you might not have known about. It's always great when you're a collector and you're looking for those kind of things and you didn't know that a certain colorway or something existed. So go check that out. And actually, I just recently bought one of those colorways in that video, and we'll do an unboxing on that within the next few weeks whenever I decide to actually do that. But if you remember last week, I said I'm working on the next documentary. Well, here's where we're at right now. I think it will be ready by this coming Tuesday. I think. Now, I say that because I don't know if I'll be I don't know if it'll be done for certain. So basically what I'm saying is this coming Tuesday, expect the next documentary. And if it's not there, you'll get a random video as always. I'll see how the weekend plays out, but it should be finished by then, which is great because I will now say if it does come out then, support your boy. As always, those long videos take such a long time to make. Takes a lot of work. I would greatly appreciate you guys sharing the video around. Send it to a friend, a forum that you frequent, this, that, and the other. Hey, help me. And if you want to know what it's about the PlayStation Portable, because that's something we really don't talk about on this channel almost ever. I've done maybe a handful of videos on PlayStation Portable, and it's the first Sony handheld, the first real Sony handheld. There was also the Pocket Station, but the PSP was great to look back on, and so we kind of talk about the trials and tribulations of that platform, how it initially did so well, then it struggled with hackers, things like that. I mean, we really dive deep a little bit into PlayStation Portable, so that will be coming this Tuesday, hopefully, but other than that, that's pretty much it. So that concludes this week's episode of Let's Talk PlayStation. I'm Ryan Benecke. Thank you all so much for talking with me, and I will see you all next Friday.